we are with Chronicles of Darkness, Creepy Rashomon Marine Buffet. This is an intro episode to talk about, you know, things. I am Devin.
I'm Peter.
Kevin.
All right, gang. So, we have a brand new game happening that we're going to play in Chronicles of Darkness. So, I guess we should kind of break down the premise of that. I guess I'll do that. Okay, so the premise of the game is Chronicles of Darkness is a game set in a modern world where there's supernatural things, and it's very much like ours, but it's moody and dark and shit, right? And in the game, you can play different supernatural monsters, vampires, werewolves, that sort of shit. So in this game, we're taking a city we've made, populated with NPCs from the different supernatural types, and Kevin, Peter, and Nicole have all made mortal human people with backstories. And because we don't know anything about a lot of the new rules for the game, what we're going to do is every game will be these mortal characters turned into that supernatural type and played out for like five or six sessions so we can learn the rules. So the first one we're going to do is these characters, if they were turned into vampires, and how vampire society works, vampire mechanics, vampire other things, vampire mysteries.
Yep.
Vampires like apples. You know, just all sorts of stuff about vampires. Then when we're done, we reset to zero. The characters pick a new supernatural type, like mage or werewolf, and then we do that for that splat. And we just keep resetting back to zero when we're done until we get through all the ones we want to play around with and learn the types to. The reason we're doing this is because we wanted to run an actual Chronicles of Darkness game, but the normal way to do that is one guy learns one person learns like how to play their supernatural type, and every person does that for their own, and the GM's expected to learn all of them at once, and no one knows what each other can do or what really the ramifications of each other's power sets are, and it's a big one-sided mystery and it's just not interesting. So this way we all together learn the system and the mechanics of all the different monster types.
Because in the New World of Darkness, or Chronicles of Darkness, as it's now called, there's more crossover than in the Old World of Darkness, where really werewolves and vampires and mages didn't interact all that much because everybody hated each other. Because in the New World of Darkness, like, more wishy-washy, you can interact, you can do stuff together.
Yeah, Old World of Darkness was like a cliquey high school, and Chronicles of Darkness is like Super Mario, where everyone, like, fights each other, but sometimes they go go-karting. There's a lot more people hanging out with each other.
Yep.
Also, in Old World of Darkness, mages were basically destroying the world because the technocracy was in control of everything.
Something like that.
Metaplots.
And they were insanely powerful compared to absolutely everyone else.
They're also insanely cool. They had Terminators and laser gravity jets. I don't want to play a werewolf when I can just have laser gravity jets.
Yeah, I think that's really implied that basically mages created everything, you know. The first mage created the first vampire sort of deal.
Some shit. Through metaplot creep, it became mages were the end-all be-all.
Especially Jesus, the christening.
Oh my god, Jesus the christening? Your mana points would be called a communion.
You're all just saints.
Your power stat would be Holy Trinity. It'd be like a morality stat, but it would like go between the three triangles and you'd get different stats. And then the left-hand spot would be the Judases. They'd have their mascot would be silver coins.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Silver coins and hanging themselves.
And so there's five of you that are left. Okay.
So that's the game premise. So what you're going to be hearing, listeners, is I have some time off work. By time off work, I mean I'm off much earlier in the day than usual. So we're just getting together and we're shotgunning through these sessions as fast as possible. Like Vampire, we did the first session for yesterday, and we're on track to be done Vampire next week and have like five, six sessions done. So we're going to shotgun through all these supernatural lines, figure out the rules. There's going to be a vague, maybe, plot going through all of them that you just see from different perspectives. So playing the different supernatural types and getting a different perspective on the same mystery is why it's a Rashomon-style game. And, well, to break down the stupid name, Creepy because it's World of Darkness, Rashomon because everything's from a different perspective, Marine because the setting's under the sea, and Buffet because we're trying everything else.
Yep.
We're trying everything.
That's the joke.
That's the joke. I've explained it to you now, listeners, so you get it. It's all good. So yeah, that's the premise. I guess Chronicles of Darkness?
Okay. So Chronicles of Darkness is the second edition of the New World of Darkness, or what that was called initially. It's, I guess, published by Onyx Path Publishing?
Yeah, Onyx Path does Chronicles.
Yeah. So they basically inherited that line from the old White Wolf that used to run the Old World of Darkness. The Old World of Darkness officially ended around 2000-ish with the Apocalypse. And they decided, okay, let's do some new line that's not burdened by, you know, a couple decades of continuity and the general meta plot.
Yeah.
And let's have some lighter game where there's no meta plot, nobody remembers, you know, things that far past. Everything can happen, everything can, you know, be found in this game. And yeah, that's generally the Chronicles of Darkness. A lighter game, less meta plot-y.
More local, too. Like, each city was basically unique.
Yeah.
It very much brought the power scale down to a more kind of personal kind of game. Even though it turns out vampires in Vampire the Requiem are stronger than most vampires in Masquerade. By dint of the dice system, you're going to fail almost all the time in Old WoD based on how difficulty modifiers work and stuff. Whereas in the dice system for Chronicles of Darkness, you're going to succeed a lot more than you fail.
Well, it's said that in the Old WoD dice, you could have some really powerhouses if you study yourself right, but...
Just as more in like actual like character sheet on a sheet, vampires are kind of stronger in Old WoD, but in actual use of them, like when you're actually rolling dice, oh man, you're gonna fail a lot more. So Chronicles of Darkness has a core book called The Chronicles of Darkness book. It used to be called New World of Darkness, then it was called The God Machine Chronicles, and now they just switched to Chronicles of Darkness so they don't have to share the same name with World of Darkness, which was the original World of Darkness that White Wolf still owns the properties to and is re-releasing. So it's just, it's this whole thing that people not familiar with the game will be confused over. You're going to have to check a wiki and just read about it. The wiki's probably, like, Wikipedia's probably just great at breaking that down. It's just easier. But that is the core book. It teaches you the system, how to play people. It gives you some mysteries that are tied into a specific supernatural thing. The Chronicles of Darkness book is very good at running a very nice kind of, you know, spooky modern world game, which is so very popular in fiction, TV, books, and movies recently.
Yeah.
Like, what would be some stuff that you think would be Chronicles of Darkness in fiction that's relatively popular?
Scooby-Doo.
Fuck you, yes. Yes, it would. Scooby-Doo, sure. I was going to say, like, True Blood, but okay.
Supernatural.
Specifically, actually, with Scooby-Doo, Mystery Incorporated. Mm. That's actually pretty good, and a really serious take on the show. Yeah, Supernatural, where every myth is true and everything's all weird. Found footage movies. True Blood? Did I say True Blood?
Yeah.
I used to have a lot more examples when I used to watch TV. Something or other? I don't know. Some fucking show or book.
Twilight?
How about the books about the cities of bones?
Mm.
Mortal Remains?
Sure.
I don't know.
Boner City?
Boner City, yes, Kevin. That's exactly what I meant.
I've never even heard of this, actually.
It's like My Mortal Remains, The City of Bones. It's like a book series, and it was like a movie that no one watched, and now it's a TV series on Netflix that some people will watch. I don't know, man. It's Chronicles of Darkness. Solid book. You can find it online to have, and it teaches you shit about playing a mortal game.
Yeah.
Really nice rules for social, really nice rules for investigation, very up-to-date RPG tech in it, in that it's not based on pass or fail, it's based on passing or passing but. So instead of just being an investigation, you're going to fail, you're always going to move forward in an investigation, but the clues and hints you get in it are going to get changed and muddled the worse you do.
Yeah, plus, generally it's a good upgrade to the previous version of the New World of Darkness.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah, it's pretty much an overhaul to some of the systems. It seems to be much more streamlined and much more interesting, like even the beat system. Like in the old, the first version of the New World of Darkness, you earn an experience based on, well, at the end of the session, you get like 1 to 3 experience based on how well you perform, or you succeeded, and stuff like that. In this one, it's much more involved. During the whole session, you can earn a couple beats, which are fractional experience, and at the end, you turn out the proper experience and so on, which means that you earn less experience, but you earn it more often.
And experience is linear.
Yeah. which means you don't have some high multiplier just to get your fifth dot in something. It's the same cost no matter whether it's first dot or fifth dot.
Yeah, so like in the old World of Darkness, it was like dot in an attribute you have times like 5, and that's how much XP you had to spend. So your second dot was 10 XP, your third dot was 15 XP. It took fucking forever to level up. In Chronicles of Darkness, it's a flat number. Like, spend 3 XP to get a new attribute dot.
Yep.
And because you control how many beats you earn, you can just ratchet that shit up constantly and really advance your character really quickly.
Plus, it allows you to create more rounded characters rather than min-maxing just to get the max amount of XP out of your character.
Yes, Chronicles of Darkness did what so many of the old White Wolf systems didn't, and got rid of the incentive to buy fives and everything.
Yep.
Because if you buy fives at character creation, like if you take a 5 in strength, you've saved yourself like 200 XP in the long run than if you went like 2 strength, 2 dex, 2 con, or whatever it could be.
Yeah.
Because to go from strength 2 to 5 is cheaper than... No.
From going from strength 2 to 5 is more expensive than going to dexterity 2 and stamina 2 from once.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it just costs a lot. So taking 5's character creation is always worth it. And that's something Exalted did and didn't get rid of for Exalted 3rd Edition. So I don't know why they didn't do that. But Chronicles of Darkness got on board, and now everything's a flat cost.
Yep.
Yay!
So yeah, that's generally it. So it's a welcome upgrade. Maybe some of the writing is...
I like the writing. Chronicles of Darkness really pushed for what was called the God Machine. Which was a fictional thing in the first version of New World of Darkness. There's like a story of it in the book. It was referenced kind of in all the supernatural splats. It was like this fun Easter egg, and they were like, hey, this fun Easter egg is actually a pretty interesting concept. Let's just turn it into like an entire thing. So now in the Chronicles of Darkness book, in the second half of it, it gives you saying ideas for what's called the God Machine Chronicles, where a parasitical machine, you know, eldritch entity is like latched on to reality, and that's what makes it shitty. And it's doing weird stuff, and like you can have a game where you're investigating and seeing stuff, and it has angels and weird shit going on.
Yep.
So the big flaw with the New World of Darkness first edition was there wasn't really any driving point to it. Like, it was kind of just like a toolkit, whereas Chronicles of Darkness is a nice little book for running a game, and it also provides a nice setting for new GMs to kind of jump into.
Also, with all the second editions that are being re-released now for all the major splats, those are self-contained rather than the old ones where you had to have the World of Darkness.
Yeah, I found that out earlier. So in the original New World of Darkness, you had to have the Blue Book, the World of Darkness book, and your Supernatural book. Like, you have to have the Vampire book. But now with the second edition, like Peter said, yeah, they just put all the rules in the one book.
Yeah.
So, perfect.
Much more convenient. The books are a bit thicker, but okay.
Well, they cut a lot of redundant shit and replaced the redundant shit with useful info. Like, for instance, in Mage. In Mage, every single magic sphere you had, they gave you a rule for the armor spell, the sight spell, and a few other ones, but those things were identical across all 10 of the magic spheres and got, like, a little paragraph of page count.
Yeah.
So in the second edition of Mage, instead of giving one to every single one of the 10 spheres, they put Mage Sight, Mage Armor, and the common spells on one page and said, this works for every one of them. Here's a few instances how there might be different. But instead of having 10 different entries, it's one entry.
Yep.
You know, that saves a couple of pages of page count.
Yep.
So yeah, that's Chronicles of Darkness. I guess next we'll give a brief intro to these supernatural types you can play. All right, and we're back. So we're going to talk very briefly, or as briefly as possible, about the supernatural character options that you can play in the Chronicles of Darkness. So, there are a few tropes that are common amongst all of them. They all generally have... So, like, you're usually playing a supernatural critter, like a vampire, or a wizard, or a werewolf. And your character is usually one of several subtypes. Like, for vampires, there's 5 different clans, can't see that, which are different, like, races of vampire. Like, the Gangrel are vampires as werewolves. The Nosferatu are vampires as Count Orlok from the fucking movie Nosferatu. The Ventru vampires are vampires as, you know, Lord Ruthven, the nobleman, the blue blood.
Yep.
They kind of go like that. So most of the splats, or most of the supernatural types, have 5 subtypes that you pick a character creation, that you pick one of. So vampires have the different vampire breeds. Werewolves have different.
When they're born under
the
moon, their attitude about hunting.
Yeah, mages have the different paths of magic they ascribe to. Prometheans are the type of person corpse they're made of. Like, this is a whole thing, okay? And then the other thing is their organization or their faction. So there are factions of these supernatural critters, and they all embody different ways to be that supernatural, and you can be a part of them, and there's politics and shit involved in it.
There's also usually five of them.
Yeah, there's also usually five of them, sometimes not. They've been moving away from the five and five standard recently.
Well, in general, there's more variation than in the old World of Darkness, where, for example, for vampires, you get basically three sects and 13 clans, and everything was pretty much rigid, that one sect fights another. Because here, everything's more fluid. You can be more towards your clans, you can be more towards your covenants.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't such clear-cut distinction between them. And, yeah, you can have conflicts however you want to arrange them in your game.
Mm-hmm. All the supernaturals usually have their own morality, how they... basically how they keep being thinking people and stop from going insane, because that's just a common theme in the World of Darkness, you eventually breaking down your morality and snapping in some way. Vampires is called humanity. When it gets low enough, they become reaving monsters. Mages have wisdom. When it gets low enough, they become insane, psychopathic, people lost in their own delusions. Werewolves is on like a balancing track. Like, it goes from one end to another. And if you go too far to one end, you become like a spirit. If you go far to the under, you become like a flesh monster.
You just become a human.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more balance between the physical world and the spirit world. If you go too far to the spirit world, you can no longer interact with the real world because you're just a spirit.
So that's common. The other common is a power stat, which is just a number that tells you how good you are at being magic. And they all have their mana, which is what they use to spend on their superpowers. So vampires have blood potency. It tells how strong they are as a vampire. They spend blood points, which is what is used to power their vampire powers, and they need it to be alive. They have to drink it from people. Mages have whatever. So, that's basically... Oh, another common thing is all the supernatural lines usually have a nemesis type. One that's evil. I think vampires, the nemesis type, are owls, like demon owl spirits. Mages are things called the Seers of the Thrones, which are like magic super-Nazis that serve magic super-Nazi gods. Werewolves have
Impure, which are another type of werewolf that are fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And also the spider and rat tokens.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know that much about the other ones, so...
Demons have the angels.
Oh, demons have actual fucking angels, yeah. So, you know, these are common threads that exist between all the supernatural lines, basically. I guess we'll get into them. So, first one, most important one, because it's the one that drives the sales, is vampire. In vampire, you were caught by a vampire and turned into a vampire. Now you're a vampire. You have vampire magic, you meet at vampire clubs, and you have to handle vampire politics in vampire society.
Yeah. See that in the Vampire the Requiem, there's a very strong focus on the social aspects of it. In the other lines, like status in the city or clan or covenant is not as important as in vampires, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Double down on that in this new edition, I suppose.
Yeah. Vampire is very much a game of hostile politics and social maneuvering. It's interesting for that. There are different vampire types you can play. They have vampire magic that's pretty cool and covers basically every trope that exists for vampires. I guess that's it. There's not much to say. Vampire's popular and it's simple. You know, I tell you what you're playing, you basically get it right off the bat.
Yeah, pretty much vampires don't interact with that many other splats because they can't really go to the spirit world all that much. They can't do that outlandish magic or anything like that. Like, you know, humans with superpowers, really.
Yeah, vampires are easy to describe. A lot of the game's focus is on personal horror because you were alive and now you're dead, and also you prey on people. How do you fucking reconcile that with you, with everyone who wants to believe they're a good person on the inside?
Yeah,
especially when you literally have a thing living inside of you that like tries to dictate your actions.
Yeah, vampires are puppeted by the beast,
which
is this angry predatory force that is inside all vampires, inside their blood and stuff, that makes them do shit they wouldn't want to do.
Yeah, it's like this three-faceted thing that, like, sways you towards a different, you know, stereotypes of a vampire where, you know, they're romantic, preys on people sexually, or the violent one that tears them apart. And there's a third one.
Competitive
one.
Which I don't know where that maps to.
It's mostly due
to be
other
the alpha. You know,
oh,
be
okay.
The very best.
Be the head vampire?
Yeah,
so. Like in Lost Boys?
Something like that.
Have you not seen Lost Boys?
I don't think so.
Movie night.
Yeah.
It's required watching. We're in the 80s and vampires.
So I guess some of the major changes for the previous version, you have a little bit different humanity that's more...
It's too specific. The listeners will fucking pick it up as we actually play the game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's Vampire. We don't have to go into a lot of detail because it's shaped like itself.
Yeah.
I tell you you're playing vampires, you know, listeners. And that's the only one that is really straightforward, because now we get into Mage, the other most important line in the Chronicles of Darkness. It's the one that everyone loves and is super popular, and it's the one that gets the most consistently played by folk. Like, whenever I try to talk to people Chronicles of Darkness, it's Mage. People fucking love Mage. I didn't really get it for the longest time, but I joined a few Discords about it and asked questions, and people were able to explain it better to me. And the revised version of Mage is much more better written and much more clear and much more gameable, I think.
Yep.
So in Mage, you're a wizard. That's the long and short of it. The world you live in is a lie, very much allegorically speaking, like the Matrix, and one day you just flick on and understand that you're in the Matrix, and you also know how to hack it.
You become so woke.
Yeah, you're woke as fuck. You start throwing firebombs on liberal arts colleges.
Yeah.
We'll just cut that line. So, you've woken up, you realize that the world is a fucking lie, and now you have god reality warping powers. And that's kind of put through the lens of what type of magic path you're most aligned to. There's five of them that are different, and I don't have that much experience with them, but they're different archetypes of what kind of wizard exists. Like, one's a shaman, one's an alchemist. That's all I know. That's it. Just those two.
Witch.
One's a witch.
Warlock.
Witch is different from shaman, though. They're completely different. They're not the same at all. So are warlocks and alchemists. Not identical.
For the mages, the starting path, whatever, doesn't dictate as much as in vampire thing, so it's much more fluid there.
Yeah. But mage, it's not that much on social stuff, and it's not that much on dealing with that you're different, because you're still a person.
Yeah.
You're still alive. You can still go to Taco Bell. It's fine. Everything's fine. You're a person with superpowers that, if your magic is the right type of magic, you can just make gold or endless amounts of vodka.
You're a squishy mortal with phenomenal cosmic power.
I mean, you're not that squishy. I've heard the people on the Chronicles of Darkness Discord, shout out to them, talk about Mage, and the way they talk about Mage is if you go up against a Mage, you're basically going up against a Solar Exalt.
Mm.
It's not going to go well. Mage as a game line is fundamentally not overpowered, but it's the most powerful. Like, they have a lot of variety. A Mage that encounters something they want to deal with, if they're given time, they can overcome it. Their powers have the most kind of reach to them. Like, vampires have, like, blood tricks they can do. Mages have these things called spheres, which are like these 10 different types of ways they can hack reality. One of them is space. Another one is time. Another one is life. If you have enough time, you don't have, like, one power. Like, in Chronicles of Darkness, usually your powers go from one dot to five dots, and each dot represents a single trick. Like, for vampire, if you're a shapeshifter, the first dot lets you bury yourself in the ground and never be found. And, like, the second or third dot lets you change into an animal. In Mage, each dot represents an entire sphere, an entire list of tricks you can do, and you can hack together new and unique spells by crossing them over.
Yep.
So, a Mage with enough time can, and they have rules for it, can go back in time and shoot his own grandfather in the head and be fine. And it's a real thing that happened. And get fucked. A Mage with enough time can go back in time and shoot your grandfather in the head.
And you won't be fine.
You won't be fine. You're not a mage. That's going to hurt.
Yeah.
You're going to feel that in the morning. A mage with enough life can cure cancer. A mage with enough space can open up holes on Earth to an asteroid belt, walk through, and be fine with other magic, mine all the gold off the asteroid, bring it back to Earth, and tell the economy to get fucked.
Yeah.
Generally, they don't want to cure cancer, though. They want to turn people into dinosaurs.
Yeah, mages don't want to cure cancer. They want dinosaur people.
Yeah.
So mages descend from the allegory, and they make it very clear in the book that it's an allegory of Atlantis, the city where people were super gods,
yep.
And not Atlantis, the Lost Empire, where people were functionally illiterate.
Yep.
So there was this ideal called Atlantis where the world was perfect and super awesome, and then I think it blew up, and it's not that world anymore,
well,
and now we live in a world that's full of lies.
Pretty much, there was Atlantis, people from true magic there, decided, you know what, how about we go to the proper world, the Supernal world, and rule from there. So they built the Tower of Babel, and then it broke, and then it broke the world.
Yeah, the name of the game with Mage is Hubris.
Yeah.
You have unlimited power, and your morality stat is basically based around you having unlimited power and being wise enough to know when not to use it for petty shit. Like turning a water bottle into vodka.
Yep, don't boil your water with magic.
Exactly. Like, just don't be shitty with your magic. Don't mind control people so they give you discounts and get fired from their job, asshole.
Yep.
Don't get all creepy and rapey with mind control magic.
And I guess the other aspect of Mage is the Paradox.
It's not that big anymore. Paradox is this thing, listeners, where if you used... Okay, so World of Darkness has this thing in the original World of Darkness and in a lot of first edition New World of Darkness where you have cool powers, and if you use them, someone's going to kick you in the dick.
Yep.
So with Vampire, there's the Masquerade and Threats of Breaches. With Mage, there's this thing called Paradox. So you used your cool Mage power, and if people who weren't woke, who aren't mages, see it, your magic crumbles to shit and falls apart, and then like a spirit of Paradox of like trying to correct the magic problem you made shows up and kicks you in the dick.
Oh, basically trying to change the world reverberates back at you.
Yeah, but it was this theme that a lot of those games had where you couldn't really be cool because people would like get really fucking angry if you tried to use your powers.
Yeah.
In Mage 2nd Edition, Paradox ain't that big of a deal.
Cool.
The dice aren't even that rough. It's been practically castrated. Eh. You can push through a lot of Paradox just from what I've been looking at by just being smart, doing the bare minimum.
Yeah.
Mages have factions that exist and hang out, and they all share a common hatred of the enemy splat, the Seers of the Throne, which Peter's Mage is totally possibly going to be in the Mage game we run, so that's going to be great.
Well, because the fun thing about the second edition is that they made the enemy splat sort of more playable and more of an actual option that you can
do. Yeah. They even include rules for like taking like powers from the enemy splat and stuff,
yep.
So neat.
Yep.
But I'm sure that's not going to come into conflict at all.
We'll see.
It's actually pretty good, because you playing Seer of the Throne, you playing Magic Hitler, means that we, playing the Mage game, get more of a bird's eye view on what people think of Magic Hitler and how that... Like how their tricks and stuff work.
Yeah.
Which is helpful when we eventually run Mage for real in the future.
Yep.
I think it's a positive learning experience.
Sure.
What else do mages have? Mages have secret societies. Mages deal with everything.
Lots of tricks. Basically, they can go to pretty much any splat and do whatever.
Splat, by the way, listeners, is the short form term for the other supernatural character options in the Chronicles of Darkness.
Yeah, they can interact with pretty much anything in the setting because they're so flexible.
Yeah, mages interact with everything. Like, mages interact with geists and vampires because they have spirit and death. Mages interact with werewolves because they have spirit and damaging spells. Mages interact with Frankensteins because why not? Mages interact with demons because mages can understand that the god machine's a real thing.
Yep.
Mages can interact with changelings because they can go into the hedge.
Yep.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. So Mages is the biggest splat. It's the one that people love the most. It's the one that has the most weird, gonzo-y, open-ended stuff. That's not to say the other ones don't. It's just Mages, like... So when people vote... Like, they do voting polls on what supernatural type is going to get, like, a new setting or a new, like, timeline write-up. And Mage consistently comes out on top because people lose their shit for Mage.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You can do anything in that system, so why not?
Yeah. And there's a lot of fun little, like, quirks to it, like... If you're good at actual fallen world science, like, I don't know, molecular science or whatever, you can supplement your lack of understanding in some magic by using the science to kind of punch upward a bit.
Ooh.
Like, if you want to make uranium, but you only have very limited matter control, you can use the limited matter control to make the actual real world science behind enriching uranium move faster and enrich uranium in your garage.
Ooh.
Instead of, like, needing the higher level matter where you can just make it whole cloth. So that's Mage. It's cool. I think I really like it. We haven't gotten to play it yet, but I think it's really fun looking.
Yeah.
And after that is the last of the big three. Vampire, Mage, and Werewolf are the big three, and Werewolf is the third one. In Werewolf, you are a werewolf.
You got jumped into a gang. Werewolves are like gangs, packs.
Yeah.
And it's all about pack dynamics. And
yeah, werewolf has had one of the rockier visions of it, because they really cut a lot of the Native American stuff out of it for the best, because Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Now werewolves have a more universal purview to them, where instead of just kind of aping Chakotay from Voyager and Pan Flutes, it's instead, werewolves are a gang. Like Kevin said, you get jumped in, and now you're part of it.
You deal with spirits. It's all about the spirit world and trying to adjust to, you know, being this creature that's super aggressive and angry all the time. It's anger management, the game.
You went to prison for theft and came out as part of a gang with tattoos, and you're really angry about it.
And werewolf is another one that seems to be designed to interact with the other splats, because a werewolf pack consists not just of werewolves, but people who have been affected by them. Like, if you see a werewolf and they, like, traumatize you, sometimes you'll just turn into a wolf-blooded. And you're, like, the wolfman-style wolf.
Yeah, like, werewolves are, like, the apex super god predator. And the thing Kevin's talking about, where people, like, see werewolves and just turn into werewolves spontaneously, those are, like, American Werewolf and London Werewolves, or, like, Ginger Snaps werewolves.
Yeah. And then they'll also sometimes just adopt vampires or changelings or mages.
Yeah, werewolves jump people into the gangs. They're big fans of it. And, yeah, I'm not too clear on werewolf, because it's, like, of the three, it's the one I know the least about.
Hmm.
But you're like a super god. You have, like, you're indestructible, you heal really quickly, you have tons of strength and damage throwing out going on. That's the meme from the old editions. You're the legacy child of a moon god from Pangaea.
Oh, yeah. There's these old gods, and one of them is, like, the moon god. And there's Luna, who's all vocal. Insanity and stuff, from what I understand.
Your space alien moon wolf soldiers from the moon.
Really, like the whole thing of this planet. Oh, there used to be that old god, but then the world decided, okay, you know, you're not good enough anymore. You're too old. Let's kill you. And that's where that other spot came from. Those the guys that didn't participate in that. Now they're all
true wolves,
the pure wolves.
Yes, psychotic.
Yeah.
Because
they didn't participate in the murder, they're now hoity-toity.
They're all about, you know, werewolves are the top thing ever, and, you know, murder everyone else.
Yeah. But, yeah, we don't know that much about werewolf. I think we'll know more. I think werewolf is going to be just, like, one we try out in Under the Sea, which might have hilarious results. In old versions of werewolf, you used to play were-critters. Like, you could be a were-shark or a were-flamingo or whatever. You can't anymore. In the new version, they've locked it down to were Wolf.
Yeah. That's interesting, because I think in the first edition of the World of Darkness book, there was a hint about some were-swans being a thing.
There's hints that things exist, but they haven't
been
looked for it yet.
They're not werewolf-werewolves.
Yeah.
Like, werewolf-werewolves are like apex murder gods, and you have like weird, greebly critters that exist outside of the creature type that can be mistaken for werewolves and confuse the shit out of monster hunters. But they're not the same.
Okay.
Which is interesting. The World of Darkness has no one right answer to what is a critter and what is not. Like, they have a book about different types of vampires. And, you know, some of them are like Filipino vampires, like the Aswang. Or some of them are like those parasites that live on fish tongues that are like roaches. Some of them are vampires that are like psychic vampires that like drain your passion and willpower. But a hunter might think that's what all vampires are like, because that's all they know.
Hunters are stupid.
Hunters are stupid. But, yeah, that's werewolf. We can't go into I don't know, man. It's you're a werewolf, not
yeah.
a swearwolf.
It's something we'll develop over time when we actually play them.
Mm-hmm. So after that, those are the big three. Those are the ones that are kind of the pillars of World of Darkness. It's what I think like 90% of people end up playing, because they're just like the most common ones. It's like how Exalted, most people play Solars or Dragonblooded.
Yeah.
So after that, you get the not big three, the other splats, which are still pretty popular.
Uh-huh.
Promethean. This one's trickier to explain, because the second edition fixed stuff and changed a lot of fundamental shit. But Promethean is some guy wanted to make a person, and they made a person, probably out of corpse parts, and you're that person. And you want to be a real boy now, Pinocchio. And you go on this whole pilgrimage with a capital P to be a real boy. And you have crazy Frankenstein powers from it.
Alternatively, you're a robot.
Well, yes. In this edition, they introduced the ones that aren't made out of corpse parts. They introduced it like someone made a mannequin, like the movie Mannequin.
Mm-hmm.
Watch the movie Mannequin, listeners. That's a Promethean story.
Watch and, May. May is a perfect example of Promethean.
Oh, okay. And, yeah, you're just... you're something someone tried to make into a person, and the most common material were corpse parts, because man is, like, the most common, you know, machine to make a man out of. But now that tech's advanced, you can be, like, cyborgs and robots or a mannequin. And yeah, the whole story is you want to be a real person, and at the end of it, you become a real person if you succeed, and you're literally just a real, normal person. You have no magic in you anymore. You're just a person. And you get to, like, go to Starbucks and work a desk job and catch cancer.
And then die.
Go to Vancouver, get into a hockey ride, and get, like, hit really hard, and you hit the concrete, and then you're in traction for 6 months and, like, have a little bit of mild brain damage. Then you're on welfare for a bit and social assistance, and then you eventually don't do anything with your life.
Well, maybe you've got some luck. Maybe you'll become a vampire.
Right? I'm taking the piss out of Promethean, but it's actually... I used to dislike it much more than I do now, because a lot of it seemed... I just didn't like how it was written, but second edition seems cool. The story of becoming a person seems interesting, and they toned the fuck down on that
the world hating you.
The
disquiet.
Thing, disquiet.
Yeah, the wasteland.
Yeah, so Prometheans are kindled by the invisible fire of man, not radiation. The other invisible fire of man, the fire of progress. I don't know. Some shit.
Yeah,
it's an invisible fire, and this invisible fire, which is not well contained in their Frankenstein bodies. Burns the landscape physically and spiritually around them, so wherever they live turns into a hate-filled pitchfork mob ghetto that eventually people start like beating each other up and then eventually start wanting to murder you and become paranoid assholes. In first edition, this happened so much that it seemed unplayable to me, but in second edition, much like with Paradox, they've really neutered it, so it's not shit.
You can live in a city and just go somewhere remote so you're not ruining everything.
You could be a cam girl. It's just possible. Anything's possible with Bush in the White House. So, yeah, Promethean is you weren't a person, you're now a person, and you want to be a person.
Personhood.
It's about being a person. Alright. And the types are the different like myths about making people. Like, one's the Golem of Prague, one's Frankenstein, one's Galatea, the statue that came alive, and there's other ones. So, the next one is Changeling.
You're an abuse victim.
Okay, yeah, alright. Changeling, you're an abuse victim. So, we're going to tell you how we see it, and then I'm going to try and describe how an objective person might describe Changeling. So, you were like a guy or a girl or an adult or a kid enjoying your life, and then a stranger grabbed you and took you someplace and held you hostage and made you dress the way he wanted you to dress or act like a dog and, like, you know... kept you captive and did stuff to you for a lot of years, and then one day you fucking broke free and ran back to the real world, and now because you've been an abuse victim for so long, you start to take on aspects of your abuser and are different fundamentally, and everyone else's lives have moved on, and you're trying to reintegrate in society, and also are afraid that one day you'll be kidnapped again, like the movie Hostel.
Yeah, and you can never go home.
I mean, you can go home, it's just different.
It's different.
Objectively speaking, you're a person... And these things called fairies, or the true fae, are like, I'm going to abduct you. And they abduct you, and they take you to fairyland. And they make you play through their fairy stuff. So they might turn you into a dog, or turn you into a statue, or turn you into, like, an adventurer. And make you act out their bullshit. And then one day you're able to break free and come back to the real world from fairyland. And because you've been in there so long, you're warped, and now you're a changeling. Like, you're half man, half fairy. And, you've internalized their powers, and now you can do fairy stuff. And you find other fairies and form an abuse survivor. I mean, a fairy court. And just hang out.
And act suspiciously like them.
Yeah, and act suspiciously like them in most every way because of irony. Also, the fairy probably left what's called a fetch behind, which is like a log shaped like you that everyone just thinks is you. And it could have died and gotten sickly.
Or gone wrong.
Or it's just there, and it's just a person that people like. So eventually you're going to go and find it and either A, make friends with it, or B, hit it in the face with a crowbar a bunch of times while telling your parents that you tied up that you're the real son and this is an imposter, even though you look nothing like you anymore.
Yeah. Well, sometimes time doesn't work right in the hedge where you're kidnapped, so you come back looking like an adult.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're still a kid.
Yeah,
Changeling
is, again, one of those games that's fundamentally hard for me to get into, because first edition is like, yeah, you're going to be a survivor. And, like, old Changeling, the original Changeling, is like, friendship is magic. Imagination is everywhere. Let's go on a crazy, multi-spectrum, rotoscoped adventure. And
also,
like,
psychiatrists are bad.
Yeah, psychiatrists are evil.
And the second edition for this game hasn't come out yet, so we're not sure what they might change about it.
From what the previews have shown, it's a fundamental like page one rebuild that tightens up a lot of these themes and maybe loosens up on the abuse survivor aspect, because it's
really depressing.
It's depressing. Like, okay, like the cover for the original Changeling is like this fun stained glass bullshit cover.
Mm-hmm.
The cover for first edition Changeling is like a rose on, I think, a green thorn bush, I think. I think it's like thorns everywhere, and there's a butterfly on it. You're like, oh, cute, a butterfly. But the butterfly's been crucified by the thorns. You're like, oh, cute, a butterfly.
I should add that the introductory story for Changeling, the newer version, is a woman pays her uncle to go and assassinate her fetch, who trusts him because he's also her uncle. And just, he beats her head in.
Yeah, no, there's no roses on the cover of Changeling the Lost. It's like, it's like a hedge maze,
mm-hmm.
and there's a little butterfly in it, but it's like stick, murdered into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the introductory story is, yeah, someone having their fetch murdered. yeah, I don't have much to say about Changeling. I'm sure second edition will be interesting, because all the second editions have really blown it out of the water. Like, they've been just
great fundamental
rebuilds.
A lot of these were just waiting to come out before we give them, so.
Yeah. After Changeling is Hunter. Hunter is that show you've seen that's been going on for too long called Supernatural.
Basically.
You're a person who has no real way to function in society because you figured out monsters are real, and you have spent an unhealthy amount of time trying to murder them, or trying to document them.
Or trying to save them.
But the default assumption is, carry on my wayward son, shotguns full of rock salt. Usually hunters have like one or two supernaturals they like focus in on, and it's like, you know, that's their shtick. They're like hunting monsters.
Yeah, it can be very disquieting, depending on if you've played the other splats, and plus know that these supernatural creatures are people who are struggling with their own things.
Though, the things you can face as a hunter might not even be the character options. They could be like one of those weird things that just exists
rival
in the world of darkness.
And, yeah, those things that just exist. Owl spirits.
Yeah, owl spirits, or leviathans, or just weird shit.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
aliens exist, but not really, and they're weird. You know, hunters can run the gamut. And also, hunters introduce this three-tier aspect, where tier one of hunter is you and a bunch of assholes in town are, like, hunting a monster. Tier two is, like, it's a larger kind of impromptu society of people that hunt various supernaturals. And tier three is, like, you work for the U.S. military Project Valkyrie, and you hunt werewolves with lightning guns.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool. You're fundamentally a person in Hunter. You just get, like, access to cool tricks. And you being an obsessive asshole on hunting creatures gives you, like, access to some supernaturally tricks.
Yeah.
It's cool. After that's Geest. Geest is another one I don't know much
about. I don't know anything about Geest.
Okay, so back in Old WoW days, they had a game called Wraith, where you died and you played out moving on because you were Wraith. And that game was depressing as fuck and pretty good. Geest is, like, the concept of that, but fucking lightened up a bit, dear.
Okay,
so,
I've heard a little bit about Geese, and some people I knew wanted to get into it. So basically, you were a normal person, you died, and then something approached you saying, hey, would you like to live again? But, you know, you work for me now, or something like that. You come back to life, and, you know, it's party, because, hey, you died once, might as well enjoy the rest of your life. But, yeah, you have to have something, you know, with its things, I suppose.
You have a dark passenger in the back of your mind, like fucking Dexter's dad. That's a concept of death, a psychopomp or some shit. And yeah, you died, and now you're alive, and you have a dark passenger, and the whole point is like, eh, you're alive now, so you get to enjoy being alive and doing all crazy fun shit. And they draw a lot of inspiration from Mardi Gras for this splat, but you go around with your geese friends solving ghost problems. Whether that's murdering ghosts, making them move on, telling ghosts to move out of that haunted house, or some other shit. You also can't die. Every time you die, your dark passenger resurrects you. So you're, like, too cool to live and throw yourself off a bridge for fun. There's serious consequences to
dying.
Hey, kid, want to see a dead body? Blam!
Yeah.
Yeah, Geest is fine. I have no idea what I would ever do with Geest. It just hey, it exists. Good for it. People seem to like it.
Yeah.
Then you got Mummy. Completing the Universal Monster Seven-fecta? I don't know. You have Mummy, where you're a mummy, like Boris Karloff the Mummy. Back in the day, and back in the days pre-Egyptian times, you were a soldier for the Egypt gods, and they were like, we want to keep you around forever, and you're like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. So you're a mummified mummy in a tomb full of treasure, and you have a cult that loves you, called your guild or whatever. And every once in a while, someone's going to break into your tomb and rob it, or the Egyptian gods are going to be like, hey, we need you to go and do something, or something awful is going to happen, and we need you and a bunch of other mummies to do it. So you fucking resurrect out of your tomb and look like a person and have unlimited power. Like, all your stats in the game kind of start out maxed, and you have to go and do the job that your judge sent out for you. When you do it, your stats start to immediately crash down to starting level, and then you have to go back to sleep for another, like, 100 years.
Yeah, so the thing about Mummy is that you started the game very powerful, but you don't remember much.
Yeah, you don't remember anything about yourself.
Yeah, and by the end of the game, you remember everything, but you don't have the power to act on it.
Yeah, so it's an equilibrium of how fast can you remember who you are while you still have the power to, like, I don't know, maybe not be fucking caught in this endless cycle of dying and coming back.
Yep.
It's pretty cool. It was the very last game made before Chronicles of Darkness was published. Like, 2 months later, Chronicles of Darkness came out. So it is going to be, like, the last game to get a second edition update. Which sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Demon. In Demon, you play a demon, but not, like, a Christian demon. Like, a demon that makes no sense to anyone who knows anything about demons.
Okay.
And it's amazing.
So, fundamentally, it's very, very different from the Old World of Darkness demon.
Yeah, these people don't know about the Old World of Darkness demon. Or you play Christian demons.
So, yeah.
So,
this harbors the Chronicles of Darkness, the God Machine, basically. It goes directly from it. So, there was the concept of God Machine, which is the eldritch creature that infects the world, and you're its agents. You used to be its puppet, that, you know, we had all the information from the Matrix and so on, like, directly for it. But then you broke free because something changed, something broke in you, and now you're on the loose.
Yeah, so you're on the run from the God Machine. You have a human identity that the God Machine created, hold cloth, that exists, like it doesn't have any holes in the identity. Like, when the God Machine makes an identity for you, it changes time, actually, and updates reality for that identity to exist, including making, like, parents and guardians and loved ones and enemies and stuff. And then the angel that you were would just latch up inside of it and wear it like a skin, and you become that thing to do its missions. As a demon, you've taken that identity the God Machine made for your last mission, and you've gone rogue with it. But because you're hiding in the identity, the God Machine can't locate you, and the angels have a hard time tracking you down. The game is one part The Matrix and one part literally a Russian Cold War spy thriller.
Yep.
The game runs like a spy thriller, and it's different and weird and amazing. You and your other demons are, like, finding coded messages in fucking clouds and, like, water droplets, you know, trying to figure out what the God Machine's up to and foiling its plans and stealing from it to survive.
You're looking at your own cipher of magical powers and stuff like that.
All of your powers are exploits the God Machine leaves in the world so that their angels can, like, do stuff quickly. So all your powers are cheat codes and backdoors, and using them invokes various amounts of attention from the Matrix because it notices that shit's going wrong.
Yep.
It's a cool game.
Yeah.
I don't have any much more to say. It's a Cold War spy thriller.
Yep.
It's
a very interesting thing because you're playing a character, because you can shed your skin and try adapting a new personality as needed, or build one up from scratch. So, when you have demon packs, you can take someone's part of their lives away. It's like, oh, you had that X, how about I have that X, and you don't have to deal with that problem anymore.
Yeah, demons can make literal deals with people that fucking steal their backstory.
Yep.
Which is great. It's like, I'm going to give you that guy's fortune, and in exchange, I'm going to take your wife. And it's like, my what? And he's, like, covered in, like, gold chains now. It's like, okay, this worked out.
Yep.
It's great. So that's Demon. Demon's kind of a high point. The next one is Beast.
Beast. So, I guess
you're an asshole.
Well, it's a little bit hard to explain, but as I see it, like, Beast is the counterpoint to the hero's journey. you're that evil thing that, you know, makes heroes go on their journey. Like,
but that evil thing's not always a person.
Well, yeah.
Sometimes that evil thing is economic hardship.
I
get the metaphor,
yeah,
though.
Yeah. You're a person with a chunk of your soul missing, basically. And to fill that void, you become something that preys on people's fears and punishes them and becomes an urban legend. And in doing so, you create these things called heroes, where people who are so affected by you that they become obsessed with you and are able to, like, just whole cloth create weaknesses for you and just try to hunt you down and murder you while you're this thing that sets up in a place and creates your own weird dungeon that they go through.
Yeah, so...
So like the villain from the horror movies, I suppose?
You're kind of like, but in a really obtuse way, and it's written in such a way that you're always... The books are written in a way that it's very sympathetic to the beasts, and it justifies them in a way that vampire and, like, werewolf and, like, Grethian doesn't.
Yeah.
It's a weird one. It got kickstarted, and the kickstarted version was night and day different from the final product, and people were upset about that. There's a lot of weird things going on with Beast, and it's like it's impossible to decipher. Like,
it's designed to interact with the other splats.
Oh yeah, it's built to be fully crossover-y. Like, it intentionally is a crossover splat.
Yeah, it's one of the ones where you're supposed to work with the other ones because you can give them bonuses and you get bonuses from them. But it's kind of inexplicable why any of these people would hang around with you.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like
vampires have a tendency to be pretty trigger happy on masquerade breaches, which you are, even if you say you have the soul of a dragon.
Yeah, so you, I know you might help them hunt for stuff like that, but you're basically an excuse for them to go down the humanity lane because you're torturing people or something, kidnapping people, and yeah, not sure how that would work really all that great.
But it does, apparently. One of the big bonuses is that other supernatural types like them a bit more.
That's neat.
Yeah, you know. Beast exists. It's not something... that we're not going to use it.
No.
We're not going to use it. It seems misery porny, like the movie Misery. That's what I feel like when I think of beasts and how they interact with people. And it's odd because they're not really that much worse than vampires, but I don't know. Vampires seem straightforward. Like, vampires are dead. Vampires can't enjoy Taco Bell or pizza or sunsets. Beasts are basically like mages, you know, they are alive and they get to enjoy life, but they also get free powers, and their smug aura mocks me. It's the best way to put it. Yeah, some of them are hits and misses. Beast feels kind of like a miss.
Yeah.
And then the last one, and it's not even out, listeners, is Deviant. So Deviant is every Cronenberg movie ever. Or Akira, or Tetsuo the Iron Man, or whatever it's called. You were a person, Shadowy Company took you, Shadowy Company changed you, and now you're a monster! And you have superpowers, and you want to get back and fight back against the Shadowy government. Kind of exactly like the show Kamen Rider.
Like, a cult kidnapped you and did a ritual, and now you're, like, a monster.
Yeah, now you're a freak. It's very cool. I really like all the kind of descriptions of what it's going to be like. Like, it talks... It feels a lot like The Fly or Videodrome. It's pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot to go on. Basically, your powers can keep ratcheting up, and you can go apocalyptic. Like there's a way for your character to kind of go Godzilla and get really powerful, but you only do it once and you can never go back after that, and that's usually the end of your character and they die.
Yeah. Either you die or everyone else dies.
So, like, you know, someone bound a demon to your soul, someone put a bunch of parasites in your blood, nanomachine son, you're a cyborg, an alien, like, took out your soul and replaced it with an alien soul, just a bunch of crazy shit. Just a bunch of crazy shit. It's not out yet, but it sounds fun.
Mm-hmm.
What is weird, though, is that it probably will be out for, like, 2 years, maybe a year after this episode airs, but they're already kickstarting what's called Dark Ages, which are, like, different timelines for the World of Darkest lines.
Right.
And one of the in the Kickstarter, one of the periods they're doing has, like, Deviant as an option you can like, pay for. So, like, they're already writing setting content for it before the book's actually usable.
Weird.
And, like, so charging money for it. It's weird, but it's fine. Whatever. Okay, so that's all of them, listeners. That was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's all 11 of them. Just a big list of character types that you can play. And they all have like 5 or 6 different subtypes in them. And they all have like 5 or 6 different factions in them. So there's hundreds of combinations. And all the game lines are built to cross over. So when we're done with creepy Rashomon Marine Buffet, the idea is to play an actual World of Darkness game. And one of these 11 characters is what each character will play.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You have a vampire and a demon and a Promethean just hanging out, doing shit.
Yep.
And this also means in the future, because the four of us are learning all this stuff about World of Darkness, it's much easier to ingrain new people into playing it as well. Because
mm-hmm.
we're all learning a skill set together.
Well, at the very least, we'll be able to make some competent NPCs with this.
Oh man, I'm not even like writing up NPCs. I'm just giving them dice pools and saying, they can probably do this.
Yeah,
but like, if you want to introduce some new type of NPC that's, I don't know, a beast or something like that, then you know what to do.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that. So that's the supernatural types, and the last thing we're going to talk about is the setting of Creepy Marine Rashomon Buffet, Atlantis 1, a city under the sea. All right, and we're back. We just talked shit about certain supernatural types for like half an hour in the between the pause, listeners.
Yep.
Nothing specific, though. It's beast we don't... it's best we don't continue. So, as far as the setting goes, so for Creepy Rashomon Marine Buffet, the entire game takes place in one setting. A setting that we cooked up a little while back that was a very rough draft. It's called Atlantis 1, and it takes place in the 1980s. And it is a undersea arcology out in the Pacific Ocean, 6,000 miles or meters below the surface of the ocean. It's in the abyssal zone.
Yeah.
So Atlantis 1 represents a kind of different 1980s than the one we're used to, where geothermal energy plants became usable, and Atlantis 1's kind of the test bed. Like they have a geothermal vent that's hooked up there. And they've set up a dome for workers and technicians to live in to manage the power flow. And from there, they built other domes. And the last one went from like a science experiment. It became a full-blown city that has investor countries. It's out in the middle of open water, so it makes its own laws. It's its own country now. And it's a tourist trap at this point. So Atlantis 1 itself it has a bunch of maintenance domes that are connected to the geothermal plant. But the important part is the living domes. One's called the Promenade, which is where tourists come in and everyone mixes, and it has all sorts of stuff. And then there's a national dome for Canada, Russia, and Japan, the three major investors. And people come to Atlantis 1 for fun. They come on cruise ships. They have subs that take you down into the city. It is a normal city in basically every way. Like, it has restaurants, it has industry, it has jobs. It doesn't have cars, but it has, like, little golf carts. It has public transit and, like, bullet trains built into it to take you between the various areas. It's a functioning, almost completely self-sufficient city under the sea, which makes this a gold mine for the various monster types, especially vampires, because it's under the sea, away from the sun. No sunlight has ever touched the interior of the city, ever. That's amazing. That's pretty much the setting. People exist down there. Atlantis 1 gets movies early from studios. You can have Atlantis citizenship, which allows you to move between all three domes and skip like immigration lines, because there's like immigration gates between the domes to keep people from just like jumping into different countries, because they all count as sovereign territory.
Yep.
They have their own currency, you know.
All the fun stuff.
Yeah.
I have a question.
What?
Does Atlantis 1 have like a president run by corporations? How does it work?
Nicole is asking, if you can't hear listeners because she's a little far away, how is Atlantis run? Who's in charge? Atlantis 1 has nominally the people in charge that are whoever's in charge of the domes. So, like, the Russia dome has whatever constituted a 1980s Russian government after the fall of communism and the rise of capitalism. So, you know, it has people. Canada dome has probably some sort of mini parliament, whatever we use. I think we use a prime minister.
It probably has, like, mayors. City, not a...
You gotta be closer, because they can't hear you. Sorry.
Yeah.
But the Russian Canada Dome, the Japan Dome, probably has their own parliament, because I think they have prime ministers as well. Shinzo Abe is a prime minister, I know that, so they probably have a prime minister. The domes have people that are in charge. They have a government that runs it from that country's perspective. But, like, The Promenade Dome and the energy and manufacturing areas, they are run by a variety of corporate interests and, like, people who have land rights because they bought land rights from the people who had them during construction. During the construction phase, a lot of the companies paid their workers in not a great, in good pay-ish, but also in, like, land rights to different parts of the dome, not thinking it would be a big deal, and then it became a big deal. So those people ended up selling those rights, if they wanted to companies for huge amounts of money, and those companies use those land rights to mitigate stuff happening in the city.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, people go on sub-tours at the bottom of the ocean. There are, like, all creepy marine animals down there. The city, the domes have an under part of them that are full of, like, piping and, like, industrial, like, maintenance stuff that are full of creepy things that people don't talk about or don't notice. And there's all sorts of different supernaturals down there. You know, they have parks, they have hydroponics, they have insect farms, they have cool things that are just
animals
under the sea. Yeah, animals. They have zoos, they have a marine biology lab for, like, whales and shit.
Pretty much anything that the game needs.
Yeah, so it is in most ways a normal city for World of Darkness, but it's also unique in that it has its own unique attributes and problems. Like, if you want to leave Atlantis 1, you have to book passage on a boat that goes back to the mainland, and you have to pay money for that, or you have to stow away on a cargo ship.
Yeah, how to get in, how to get out. Well, once you're inside, it's good.
Exactly. So that's Atlantis 1, that's the setting of the scene, and the 1980s we're using is kind of an all of the 1980s at once. Like, it's not 1981 or 1982, it's January 1st, 1980 to December 31st, 1989, all at the same time. So all of the events happen concurrently as far as we care for references. So we don't have to fucking worry if mentioning, I don't know, what came out in 1989, was it Ghostbusters or something? No, the first Batman movie with Michael Keaton came out in 89. But people are still going to talk about, like, E.T., so it's not important.
Yep.
And, of course, it's our own special version slash parody of the 80s, you know, fucking clubs and neon everything and scrunchies and people fucking worried about HIV and PCP gangs and just all the crazy shit that we would do in Shadowrun.
Makes sense in a consumerist hellhole, so. Yeah.
It is a consumerist hellhole, and the 80s were all about selfish consumerism.
So much drugs.
Yeah, cocaine. Yeah. I mean, Russia just found out about crystal meth when the 80s started. Mm-hmm. And boy, howdy did that take off.
Mm.
And then Yeltsin died from overdosing. So, yeah, that's Atlantis 1. It's an under-the-sea city with its own little culture and weird stuff going on. And the supernaturals we use are the same in each splat. So in Vampire, we have a stable of, like, 11 other vampires, and they all have their own goals and dreams and stuff. But those vampires are going to be same in the Mage game, when we'll introduce also the Mage NPCs. And then in Werewolf, we'll introduce the Werewolf NPCs. So because I don't know anything about Werewolf, there aren't any Werewolf NPCs in the game, in, like, the Vampire game, because it's the first one. But as we learn them, they'll get added in. But the fun of the game is, because it's all these different perspectives, you get to kind of see these NPCs, if you catch them, operating from, like, a stance of them being an ally if you're vampires, or enemies if you're something else, or, like, creepy things that are doing horrible stuff if you're, like, a hunter.
Yep.
So I thought that was a cool aspect. It's very much a Rashomon thing, where one character is cool in one version and a monster in the other.
I guess that's it.
Yeah, that's it. That covers the kind of the premise of creepy Rashomon Marine Buffet. And yeah, by the time when this episode is launched, we'll have already recorded Vampires, and we'll be on the way to recording something else. So, you know, it'll just be one after another, and by the time we're done, I think we'll have a comprehensive actual play of most of the World of Darkness lines.
And hopefully after that, we'll have some nice game.
Yeah.
With all that in the background.
Just a general supernatural game should be fun. My idea is, because this is the 80s, they set it 40 years in the future in the 2020s, which we're basically in now, and see what Atlantis 1 looks like 40 years later.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see how that plays out. I have other ideas, like the Hunter or the Mortal game we might play, being a found footage game, where you guys are like mountain monsters, but it could be anything.
We'll see how many spots we go through. We might not do them all.
Yeah. It depends on scheduling, because we could probably knock out 3 to 4 sessions a week if we just sit down and get it to go. But that's it. So, I was Devin.
And Peter.
Kevin.
And this is sponsored by Nobody, signing off. Thank you.